Good morning. We continue our sermon series of Life Together, talking about how we as Christians and non-Christians alike, how we live life together, what makes that work. And today we talk about show no partiality. And today is a very important lesson. James is going to be talking to us, and this is kind of a scolding from God that we all have coming for us. This is kind of a parenting moment here today, where sometimes, and I know this as a parent, sometimes my kids think some rules are more important than other rules, and some of the rules that are less important are almost insignificant and don't need to be followed. Do you ever have that in your parenting? And so today, God is going to be our parent, talking to us through James, and he's going to break down what every parent needs to do when they need to address something wrong that their kid is doing. The first is they need to explain the what. We need to explain what has happened. What is wrong? Then we have to explain the why. Why is this a problem? Then we're going to see the third part of it. There's a better way to do this. And then the last part, here are the consequences when you don't do this. That's how a parent is to teach. We see those four stages. The what, the why, the better way, and the consequences. And what's interesting is our text from James today, verses 1 through 3 explain the what. Verses 4 through 7 explain the why. Verse 8 tells us the better way, and 9 and 10 tells us the consequences. So we're going to take this just like parenting. This is fun, right? Everybody loves to be scolded, right? Yeah. But here's the thing. In parenting and with God with us as well, warnings are an invitation to something better. Warnings are an invitation to something better. I warn my kids not to do something because I am inviting them to escape punishment, right? I remember a phrase my dad often said to me, "You are cruising for a bruising, son." And that was his warning that I love you and I don't want these consequences to come to you, so please, wise up and don't do this. And so we have to understand that when God gives us a warning, when God says, don't do this, it's not because he's saying, hey, I just love to be the policeman, I love to issue the tickets, or, you know, I hate you and I just don't want you to have any fun in this life. God gives us a warning because he says, I love you and there's a better way to do this. You can have blessing richly in your life if you avoid doing these things. And so we need to take these warnings from God for what they are. They're a blessing to us. God warns us because he is inviting us into something better. And so today when we talk about partiality, this is what we understand about the world. The world tells us that as we seek relationships, as we seek friendships, as people come through those doors and we interact with them, that we should seek people that can give us something, that can be a blessing to us, that we can find a way to manipulate the relationship for our better, right? You want friends who are big and powerful or have some cool connections, right? That's what the world says. You need to find friends that can do something for you. And conversely, the world says people that are going to be a drain on you, people that may need from you, bypass and ignore them. Don't build relationships with them. They're just going to suck the life out of you. They're just going to need from you. Don't build those relationships. Seek the relationships that you can profit from. And Jesus is going to turn that on its head today. Because he is speaking through James, and James is going to give us this lesson of how we are to show no partiality. And so the first thing we're going to tackle, as I said, we're going to go through the parenting stages here, is the what. The what. And that's verses 1 through 3. And the what is very simple. Show no partiality. There it is. Simple. Show no partiality. And it means do not withhold or give love or glory or affection or hospitality or friendship or mercy or kindness or service to people based on their external appearances. Don't do it. And in our world today, we see this, and God speaks very clearly. Don't show partiality. Don't be prejudiced. Don't have class arrogance, racism, playing favorites. All of that is wrong to God. And especially when we're talking about here at church, acceptance into Christianity is not based on gender, race, economic status, profession, height, weight, age, or attractiveness. It doesn't go that way. And we see an example of this in our text in verses 1 through 3. A guy comes in with all kinds of fancy clothes and fancy jewelry, and they say, "Woo, come here. You come into our church and, hey, meet all the pastors, meet all the elders. Come on, meet everybody." And then some guy in shabby clothes comes in, and we say, "Well, hey, why don't you, I'm sure there's a seat in the back somewhere for you. Or why don't you just sit so people don't see you?" See, what we see in our text is actually discrimination. Discrimination against the poor. Discrimination against those who we think don't fit our standards. And acceptance of those who we do think fit our standards. And I want to be clear as we go into this. We naturally drift towards people that are like us. That's natural. And there's nothing wrong with that. You build relationships with people based on common things, common interests, commonalities. And so you're naturally going to have friends and relationships of people like you. And this text is not saying, you know what, you should have no friends that are like you. You should, every one of your friends and relationships, they should look totally different than you, come from a different economic status. That's not what this verse is saying. This verse is saying, don't discriminate against those that are different than you. Don't withhold grace and mercy from those that are different than you. You're not the judge of that. You need to love and accept. And today, that word accept has been taken wrong. That does not mean you condone what they're doing. That doesn't mean that you don't speak grace to them and try and call them into a better life. Accept just means that you look at them and say, you know what? You are welcomed here. You are welcomed here. And so we look at this, and it's very simple to see what the what for us today is. The what is show no partiality. But now we have to get into the why, verses 4 through 7. And anybody that has kids knows this. You tell your child, don't do that. What is the next question out of their mouth? Why? Oh, that's such a fun question, isn't it? You just love that. Why? 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 We're at, you know, that stage with our three-year-old. Everything we say now, why? And what is the common parent answer? Absolutely. It's wonderful. Because I said so. Because I said so. Why do we do that? Because the why is so much more complicated, isn't it? The why is always so much more complicated. You know, as Peyton has crayons and is heading right towards the wall, and I say, don't. And she says, why? I don't want to have to sit there and go, you know what? If you color all over that wall, then your mother's going to act like this. And then when mom acts like this, daddy's going to act like this. And then when mommy and daddy are acting like this, you're going to act like this. And then it just gets crazy in this house. I don't want to have to explain that every time. I shouldn't have to explain that every time. I mean, wouldn't it be great if our kids, when we said, because I told you so, just said, okay. Wouldn't that be great? Do you ever think that maybe God thinks about that with you? That God sits there and says, wouldn't it be great if you knuckleheads would just do what I told you and not say, why? Why? I love it. Why do I have to not do this? I think he does. But here's the thing. Whys are difficult. So let's dive into the why. We know the what is show no partiality. Why does God tell us this? And it's very simple. He says it in 4 through 7. You dishonor God, and you reveal you don't understand the gospel when you show partiality. And the gospel is very clear. The gospel is that Jesus Christ died for all. All. That Jesus Christ did not discriminate against people. He did not say, well, only these elite people get my grace and my mercy. He said, I died for all people. And when we say, you know what, certain people don't deserve God's grace and mercy, we are showing that we don't understand who we are. That we are sinful, fallen people, and we don't deserve God's mercy. And so God makes it very clear, when you show partiality, you dishonor me, and you show that you don't know what the gospel is. You know, it's kind of like this. When I was growing up, and maybe you too, we would play neighborhood pickup sports, you know? We would get together, all the kids in the neighborhood, on some dirt lot or some field, and we would pick what we were going to play, kickball, softball, football, something. And we picked two captains. Who were the two captains? They were always what? The best athletes. The two best athletes, they're the two captains. And then they would go through a list, and they would pick what? The best players left. And you're just sitting there praying, please don't let me be last. Please don't let me be last. You know, that was the game. And then you guys would play. Friends, If God was after the very best, if God was after the smartest, the most attractive, the most talented, the most wealthiest people in the world, some of us wouldn't be here today, would we? I mean, I love you all, but you all are not always the smartest, most talented, wealthiest, best people. Well, that's not who we are. And some of you today are saying, well, actually, Pastor, I am. I mean, I don't mean to judge, but as I look around, I'm thinking I'm top 5% around here, Pastor. Well, let me say, good for you. Good for you. But here's the thing. Your awesomeness has not brought anybody to this church. Because when we think that our awesomeness, that our talents, our attractiveness, all those things about us, that is what people are drawn to here, then we fail. Because see, when we make much of us and little of him, we fail. Because the only thing that matters here is that God is awesome. That's the only thing that matters. And he uses this ragtag group to do incredibly awesome things. It reminds me when I was in Concordia in Austin, Texas. I was doing my undergrad. And I'm going to reveal something here. We would sneak onto the baseball field at night, and one of the security guys had a key, and we would flip the lights on, which technically wasn't allowed. But we would sneak onto the baseball field at night because it was right outside our dorm, and we would play like midnight pickup flag football games. And so we would, you know, different teams were formed, like, you know, the fourth floor had a team, you know, and I was on a team with some of the tennis guys, and we would play. And so we were doing this, and we had this one RA who was like 30 years old. He was really old, 30, yeah. And his name was Dee Dee. And Dee Dee, coming out of high school, was an all-star quarterback and linebacker, got recruited to Texas, played at Texas for 1 year, blew out his leg, kind of hit the pits for a little bit, but then decided I'm going to go back to school, get my life, get my degree, and all that. So Dee Dee was an RA. So one night I'm sitting there and I said, Dee Dee, why don't you play one night? And he said, yeah, I can find some boys. I said, okay, meet us at, you know, midnight, we'll play. He said, all right. And so, you know, I'm thinking, you know, Dee Dee was a good player, but he's got a bum leg. We got this. And so all of a sudden, you know, midnight comes and his group comes walking out. One guy's in flip-flops. And I realized, oh, he's going to play in flip-flops. I was like, I'm going to guard this guy. You know, I was like, we got this. Two of the other guys are way out of shape. You know, another guy has pants like at his knees. And so, you know, he can barely jog. And so we were like, oh, yeah, we got this. That's what we thought. Dee Dee probably scored about 15 touchdowns himself. He absolutely shook and juked every single one of us and made us look silly. He threw probably another 20 touchdowns. And then on defense, he single-handedly intercepted me about 25 times, sacked me about 90 times, and then he made every time. He was a one-man wrecking crew. I can't even tell you who the other people on the team were. It didn't matter. All any of us remembered was Dee Dee. He was incredible. He single-handedly did everything. Friends, when we talk about the church, that's the point. It's not about us and our talents and what we bring to the table. It's about God, and God does everything. God makes us a church. God makes us relevant. God makes us do incredible things because it's all him. He's the point. And we're just the ragtag group that gets to be along for the journey. You know, 1 Corinthians 1, 26 through 29 says this. For consider your calling, brothers. Not many of you were wise according to worldly standards. Not many were powerful. Not many were of noble birth. But God chose what is foolish in the world to shame the wise. God chose what is weak in the world to shame the strong. God chose what is low and despised in the world, even things that are not, to bring to nothing things that are, so no human being might boast in the presence of God. Our church is all about him. If we think we are going to be a blessed church because we bring in fancy professionals and we bring in all kinds of wealthy people and we bring in all these talented people, if we think we're a good church because of that, if we think we're a good church because of what's sitting out there instead of what's being worshiped here, we're going to miss the boat. What makes this church awesome is that Jesus Christ is worshiped and praised here, and that he uses us to do things in our community. Powerful, incredible things. What does not make us awesome is our resumes, because we are all sinners in need of God's grace. And as soon as we start thinking that we can put up a plaque on the outside of this church that says, once you have your life all together and are perfect, then you can walk through these doors, we're going to have some empty pews, hopefully. Hopefully. Because that's not what it's about. When someone walks through that door, what we need to understand is this. They're a sinner in need of grace. And it doesn't matter what their economic status is, what their race is, what their profession is. It doesn't matter if they're rich or poor. It doesn't matter what they're wearing. I mean, friends, come on. Have you not learned in this life that appearances can be deceiving? That someone can put on pretenses for a little while and look apart? Have you really not realized that in this life yet? So when we sit there and somebody walks through the door and we say, whoo, this is the person we want at our church. Really? When someone walks through that door, they are a sinner in need of grace, just like you. And that's it. That's our calling. And when we show partiality and we show favoritism, we grieve the heart of God. I mean, James is sitting here and he's calling us out, and his questions in 4 through 7 are very pointed to the church. He comes right to us with this. And he says, you, the church, you are so desperate to be loved by the world, to be accepted by the world, to be applauded by the world, to be seen as normal by the world, that you dishonor your eternal brother and cozy up to those who belittle the name of your God, mock you, and make your life difficult. And it's true today too. We are so desperate to be accepted and applauded and welcomed by the world that we sell ourselves out all the time. Here's the truth. All this thirst for the church to be cool and relevant needs to die. It does. Because we sell ourselves out to be accepted on the world's standards. If our goal in life is to make church cool by the world's standards, then we have missed the boat of what this church is about. Because the marginalization of being a Christian is not something that we're supposed to run from. It's something that we're supposed to be called to and embrace. We are going to stand apart. We are going to be different. We are going to be radically opposed to culture. Culture is not going to all of a sudden go, well done, you Christians. That's not the way it is. Jesus called it from the very beginning. And we spend too much time worried about what they think instead of worried about what God thinks. And I want another side point here. Whenever you preach these rich and poor sermons, I don't want you to be the person that's sitting there like trying to hide your BMW key right now, or you're sitting there wearing some nice new sweater your wife got you, and you're like, well, I better rip a hole in it so they think I'm poor, you know? That's not at all what we're saying, because this is where these sermons go wrong. I've heard these sermons, and they go wrong. We are not saying take your favoritism off the rich and put it onto the poor and start despising rich people. We are saying show no partiality. There's a difference. Just taking your favoritism and saying, now we're going to say all the poor people are awesome and you rich people are awful, that's showing partiality again. Jesus is very clear. Show no partiality. And so that leads us to the next stage. We've talked about the what, we've talked about the why. Let's talk about the better way. Verse 8. He says, fulfill the royal law. And what is the royal law? To love God with all your heart, mind, soul, body, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. He says, do you want to get this right? Do you want to show no partiality? Then all you have to do is uphold the royal law. Just love people. Love God and love people. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. When someone walks in that door, don't say, you know what, I'm better than you. I don't love. Just say, hey, if I was a new person walking into this church, this is how I would want to be treated. And go treat them like that. And don't treat them differently based on what they're wearing or who they are, anything like that. Just treat them just like you would want to be treated. Welcome them just as you would want to be welcomed. Give them the seat that you want them to have, probably not yours. Give them another seat. But welcome them. And show no partiality, because this is the truth. If we understand what the gospel is all about, that all of us are fallen, that all of us are broken, that all of us are in need of God's grace, that there is not categories of who's better than who, that there are only two categories, imperfect and perfect, and none of us are in that one, then we understand the point of this. Christ died for all. All are equal. All are valuable to God. All are either lost or found. That's the only categories. And we all struggle with different ailments and different diseases. We all have different blessings from God. Some of us have many blessings. Some of us few blessings. But it doesn't matter. We're all equal. We're all sinners in need of grace. And so the better way is just treat people how you want to be treated. And then comes the fun part of parenting, the consequences. God says, here's the what, here's the why. And here's the better way, but let me tell you what happens when you don't. And verse 9 and 10 tell us the consequences. And God is very clear here. As James is writing this to us through the inspiration of God, he is saying, look, you guys like to play games with the law and think that there are certain laws that are more important than others. So long as I don't, you know, commit adultery, so long as I don't murder, I'm okay. This partiality thing, that's a little insignificant law. That's not as big of a deal as some of those other ones. And James comes very clear. Hear him right now. You break one, you break it all. Because in God's mind, there is only perfect and imperfect. And if you are practicing partiality, you are a law breaker. And it's all or nothing. You are breaking the law of God. And we like to believe that these little insignificant laws, they just roll off God's back. They're of no consequence to us, and you're only deceiving yourself. And we preach this all the time, and I want you to truly hear me again today. If you are not following the words of Christ, if you are not obeying what he says, if you are not changing your life, your heart, your attitude, and your mind, if you are not actively working in that, then you are just here today believing in some historical figure named Jesus, and you are not worshiping the Lord of your life. And that's what he calls you to. See, there is a risk today that there are people here among us right now that say, I show up to church, and maybe this has been a long time for you. Maybe, you know, when you were a kid, your parents said, you're going to church with us, or you're getting your backside tanned, and you said, well, okay, I'll go to church. And so this has just been a practice for you, a duty for you. I just show up so that I don't get in trouble, and this has just become a part of my life. It's where I make some friends. It's where I hear some good words from Jesus. It's where I try and help my life. I try and fix my life by listening to the wise guru from long ago, taking what I want and throwing out what I don't. And I know there's people here today like that, that struggle with this. And this is the truth. If we cannot see the fruit of your faith, then we have to question whether you have faith. If you are not, if your spouse or your loved ones or your those close to you or your friends, if they cannot say, look, I see you maturing. I see you growing in your understanding. I see you changing your attitude, changing your heart, changing your mind. I see you growing in the faith. I see you bearing fruit. I see you building disciples. I see you sharing your faith. I see you expressing a more mature faith, a more mature understanding. If people cannot see the fruit of your faith, then we have to worry that maybe you have misunderstood what the gospel is and you have misunderstood your faith. Now, we understand that you are not saved by your works. So I'm not saying go out there and fake it so that everybody believes it. I'm saying over the course of time, we should see growth in you. And if you are sitting here saying that I come here, I sing my songs, I might even raise my hands, and I might pray, and when somebody says, oh, my loved one's sick, I'll say, oh, I'll pray for you. If you think that just doing those things, if you think just saying the words and acting the part and showing up here means that you have faith, I worry for you. I worry for you. Because we should see growth. And part of that growth is understanding that there is no insignificant laws. That you don't just get to say, here are the big ones that I'll keep, and here are the ones that are just insignificant. Part of that growth and that maturity is understanding that I break one, I break all. And that's a tough thing to understand, but it's something that we have to grow to understand. That today our lesson is this: the what is show no partiality. The why is because it dishonors God, and it shows that you don't understand the gospel. The better way is the royal law. Love God and love people like you want to be loved. Go and treat them as your brother and sister in Christ, not judging them by how they look or where their life is in that moment. All of us have had dark times. Have you? I have. Have you had dark times? And you know what I did in my dark times? You know the first place I thought, you know where I need to go? Church. So when we see that person walk in dark times, this is exactly where they need to be. And this is exactly where they need to be welcomed. And you need to look at them with mercy, not judgment. And the consequences of partiality is this: it is sin and it leads to death. And as a church practicing partiality, it is sinful and it leads to the death of a church. Because the church begins to make much of themselves and their resumes and not much of Christ. Can we close with a prayer? Heavenly Father, we come before you, and Lord, we thank you that in your eyes, we are all broken, but we are all redeemed. That you did not spare your love. You gave it to all of us. And Lord, help us to be a church that shows no partiality. Lord, we know that we as individuals and we as a church have done it, where we have judged people on their appearance, where we have said, these people are people we want, and these people are people we don't. Lord, forgive us for that. Forgive us for deciding who gets your mercy and grace and who doesn't. Forgive us for judging people when we sit in the very same boat. Lord, help us to understand that we are all sinners and all in need of your grace. Forgive us when we have done damage to you and to your word and to your mission. And Lord, bless us as we continue on from here to not be a church of partiality and to not be a person of partiality, that we would understand who we are and the gospel that we have and that it's for all people. Bless us in that mission as we go forward this day to be a church and a person that does not show partiality. And all God's people said, amen.